Hours later, the first lights of Laos burned at her through the dark, flaming beacons set atop the rocky island's old fortress. Maris angled toward them, and soon the half-ruined bulk of the ancient castle sat before her, dead but for its lights. She flew straight over it, across the breadth of the small mountainous island, to the landing strip on the sandy southwest spur. Laos was not populous enough to maintain a flyer's lodge, and for once Maris was thankful of that. There would be no lodge men to greet her or ask her questions. She landed alone and unnoticed in a shower of dry sand and struggled out of her wings. At the end of the landing strip, up against the base of the flyer's cliff, Doral's simple cabin was dark and empty. When he did not answer her knock, Maris opened the unlatched door and entered, calling his name. But the house was silent. She felt a rush of disappointment that quickly changed to nervousness. Where was he? How long would he be gone? What if Corm figured out where she had come and trapped her here before Doral's return? She set a rush against the banked and dimly glowing coals in the hearth and lit a sand candle. Then she looked around the small, neat cabin, seeking some clue as to where and how long Doral had been gone. There. Tidy Doral had left some crumbs of fish cake on his otherwise clean table. She glanced toward a far corner, and yes, the house was truly empty, and Nitra gone from her perch. So that was it. Doral was out hunting with his nighthawk. Hoping they had not gone far, Maris took to the air again in search. She found him resting on a rock in the treacherous shallows of far western Laos, his wings strapped on but folded, a Nitra perched on his wrist, enjoying a piece of the fish she'd just caught. Doral was talking to the bird and did not see Maris until she swept above him, her wings eclipsing the stars. Then he stared at her while she circled and dipped dangerously low, and for a moment there was no recognition at all on his blank face. "Doral!" she shouted, tension sharpening her voice. "Maris?" Incredulity broke across his face. She turned and caught an updraft. "Come on to shore, I have to talk to you!" Doral, nodding, stood suddenly and shook the nighthawk free. The bird surrendered her fish reluctantly and climbed into the sky on pale white wings, circling effortlessly and waiting for her master. Maris swung around in the direction she'd come. This time, when she came down in the landing strip, her descent was sudden and clumsy, and she scraped her knees badly. Maris was confused, in turmoil. The tension of the theft, the strain of the long flight after that stretch of days without the sky, the strange mixture of pain and fear and joy the sight of Doral had suddenly, unexpectedly given her. It all overwhelmed her, shook her, and she didn't know what to do. Before Doral could join her, she set to work unstrapping her wings, forcing her mind through the motions with her hands. She wouldn't think yet. She wouldn't let herself think. Blood from her knees trickled maddeningly down her legs. Doral landed beside her, neatly and smoothly. He was shaken by her sudden appearance, but he didn't let his emotions interfere with his flying. It was more than a matter of pride with him. It was almost bred into him, as much an inheritance as his wings were. Anitra found his shoulder as he unstrapped. He moved toward her and put his arms out. The nighthawk made a bad-tempered noise, but he would still have embraced Maris, regardless of the bird, had she not suddenly thrust her wings into his outstretched hands. "Here," Maris said, "I'm turning myself in. I stole these wings from Corm, and I'm giving them and myself over to you. I've come to ask you to call a council for me, because you're a flyer and I'm not, and only a flyer can call one." Doral stared at her, confused as someone awakened suddenly from a heavy sleep. Maris felt impatient with him, and overwhelmingly tired. "Ah, oh, I'll explain," she said. "Let's go up to your place where I can rest." It was a long walk, but they went most of it in silence and without touching. Only once he said, "Maris, did you really steal?" She cut him off. "Yes," I said. Then she suddenly sighed and moved as if to touch him, but stopped herself. "Forgive me, Doral, I didn't mean... I'm exhausted and I suppose I'm frightened. I never thought I'd be seeing you again under such circumstances." Then she fell quiet again, and he did not press her, and only Anitra broke the night with her grumbles and mutters at having her fishing ended so soon. Once home, Maris sank into the one large chair, trying to force herself to relax, to make the tensions drain. She watched Doral and felt herself grow calmer as he went through his familiar rituals. He put Anitra on her perch and drew the curtains that hung around her. Other folks might hood their birds to keep them quiet, but he disapproved of that. Built up a fire and hung a kettle to boil. "Tea?" "Yes."
"I'll put cherry blossoms in instead of honey," he said. "That should relax you."
She felt a sudden flooding of warmth for him. "Thanks."
"Do you want to get out of those clothes? You can slip on my robe."
She shook her head. It would be too much effort to move now. And then she saw that he was gazing at her legs, bare below the short kilt she wore, and frowning with concern.
"You've hurt yourself."
He poured warm water from the kettle into a dish, took a rag and some salve, and knelt before her. The damp cloth cleaning away the dried blood was gentle as a soft tongue.
"Ah, it's not as bad as it looked," he murmured, as he worked. "Just your knees, just shallow scrapes. A clumsy landing, dear."
His nearness and his soft touch stirred her, and all tension, fear, and weariness were suddenly gone. One of his hands moved to her thigh and lingered there. "Door," she said softly, almost too transfixed by the moment to speak. And he raised his head, and their eyes met, and finally she'd come back to him.
"It will work," Doral said. "They'll have to see. They can't deny you."
They were sitting at breakfast. While Doral made eggs and tea, Maris had explained her plan in detail. Now she smiled and spooned out more of the soft egg. She felt happy and full of hope. "Who'll go first to call council?"
"Garth, I thought," Doral said eagerly. "I'll catch him at home and we'll divide up the nearby islands and branch out. Others will want to help. I just wish you could come too," he said,
and his eyes grew wistful. "It would be nice flying together again."
"We'll have lots of that, Dor, if..." "Yes, yes, we'll have lots of time to fly together. But it would be nice this morning, especially. It would be nice."
"Yes, it'd be nice." She went on smiling, and finally he had to smile too. He was just reaching across the table to take her hand or touch her face, when a sudden knock at the door, loud and authoritative, made him freeze. Doral rose to answer it. Maris, in her chair, was in full view of the doorway, but there was no point in trying to hide, and there was no second door. Helmer stood outside, folded wings strapped to his back. He looked straight at Doral, but not past him into the cabin at Maris.
"Corm has invoked the flyer's right to call a council," he said, his voice flat and strained and overly formal, "to concern the once flyer Maris of Lesser Amberley, who stole the wings of another. Your presence is requested."
"What?" Maris stood quickly. "Helmer, Corm has called a council. Why?"
Doral tossed a glance over his shoulder at her, then looked at Helmer, who was plainly, if uncomfortably, ignoring Maris.
"Why, Helmer?" he asked, more quietly than Maris had.
"I've told you, and I don't have time to stand here moving the wind with my mouth. I have other flyers to inform, and it's a thick day for flying."
"Wait for me," Doral said. "Give me some names, some islands to go to. It will make your task easier."
The corner of Helmer's mouth twitched.
"I wouldn't have thought you want to go on such a mission for such a reason. I hadn't intended to ask for your help, but since you offer..."
Helmer gave Doral terse instructions, while the younger flyer rapidly winged himself. Maris paced, feeling restless, awkward, and confused again. Helmer was obviously determined to ignore her, and to save them both embarrassment, Maris did not question him again. Dorrel kissed her and squeezed her tightly before he left.
"Feed Anitra for me, and try not to worry. I'll be back before it's been dark too long, I hope."
When the flyers were gone, the house felt stifling. Outside was not much better, Maris discovered as she stood against the door. Helmer had been right. It was not a good day for flying. It was a day to make one think of still air. She shuddered, fearing for Dorrel. But he was too skilled and too smart to need her worry, she thought, trying to reassure herself. And she would go crazy if she sat inside all day, imagining possible dangers for him. It was frustrating enough to have to wait here, denied the sky. She looked up at the cloudy, bright overcast. If, after the council, she should be made a landbound forever. But there was plenty of time for sorrow in the future, so she resolved not to think about it now. She went back inside the house. Anitra, a nocturnal flyer, was asleep behind her curtain. The cabin was still and very empty. She wished briefly for Dorrel, to ease her thoughts by sharing them, to speculate with her on why Corm had called the council. Alone, her thoughts went around and around in her head, birds in a trap. A Geechee game sat on top of Dorrel's wardrobe. Maris took it down and arranged the smooth black-and-white pebbles in a simple opening pattern, one her mind was comfortable with. Idly she began to move them, playing both sides, shoving the pebbles unthinkingly into new configurations, each suggested by the last, each as inevitable as chance. And she thought, Corm is a proud man, and I injured his pride. He is known as a good flyer, and I, a fisherman's daughter, stole his wings and outflew him when he pursued me. Now, to regain his pride, he must humble me in some very public, very grand way. Getting the wings back would not be enough for him. No, everyone, every flyer, must be present to see me humbled and declared an outlaw. Maris sighed. That was it. This was the council to outlaw the land-bound flyer who stole wings. Oh, yes, songs would be written about it. But perhaps it made no difference. Even though Corm had stolen a flight on her, the council could still be turned against him. She, the accused, would have the right to speak, to defend herself, to attack senseless tradition. And her chance was the same, Maris knew, the same in Corm's council as it would have been in the one that Dorrel would have summoned. Only now she knew the full extent of Corm's hurt and his anger. She looked down at the Geechee board. The pebbles, white and black, were arrayed across the centre of the board, facing each other. Both armies had committed themselves to attacking formations. It was clear that this would be no waiting game. With her next move, the captures would begin. Maris smiled and swept the pebbles from the table. It took a full month for the council to assemble. Dorrel brought the call to 4 flyers that first day and 5 others the next, and each of those contacted others and those still others, and so the word went out in ever-widening ripples across the seas of Windhaven. A special flyer was sent off to the Outer Islands, another to desolate Artelia, the great frozen island to the north. Soon all had heard, and one by one they flew to the meeting. The site was Greater Amberley. By rights, the council should have been held on Lesser Amberley, home to both Maris and Corm. But the smaller island had no building large enough for such a gathering as this would be, and Greater Amberley did, a huge, dank hall, seldom used. To it came the flyers of Windhaven. Not all of them, no. For there were always emergencies, and a few still had not received the word, and others were missing on long, dangerous flights. But most of them, the vast majority, and that was enough. In no one's lifetime had there ever been such a gathering. Even the annual competitions at the Eyrie were small compared to this, mere local contests between Eastern and Western. Or so it seemed to Maris then, during the month she waited and watched while the streets of Ambertown filled with laughing flyers. There was an air of holiday about it all. The early arrivals held drinking bouts each night, to the delight of the local wine merchants, and traded stories and songs and gossiped endlessly about the council and its outcome. Barian and other singers kept them entertained by night, while by day they raced and frolicked in the air. The latecomers were greeted riotously as they straggled in. Maris, who had flown back from Laos after getting special leave to use the wings once more, ached to join them. Her friends were all there, and Corms, and indeed all the wings of Weston. The Easterners had come too, many in suits of fur and metal that reminded her irresistibly of the way Raven had dressed on that day so long ago. There were three pale-skinned Artelians, each wearing a silver circlet on his brow, aristocrats from a dark, frigid land where flyers were kings as well as messengers. They mingled, brothers and equals, with the red-uniformed flyers of Big Shoten, and the 20 tall representatives of the outer islands, and the squadron of sunburned winged priests from the lush southern archipelago, who served the sky god as well as their landsmen. Seeing them, meeting them, walking among them, the size and breadth and cultural diversity of Windhaven struck Maris as seldom before. She had flown, if only for a short time. She had been one of the privileged few, yet there were still so many places she had not been. If only she could have her wings again! Finally, all those who were coming had arrived. The council was set for dusk. There would be no crowds in the inns of Ambertown tonight. "You have a chance," Barian told Maris, on the steps of the great hall just before the meeting. Col was with her too, and Dorrel. "Most of them are in a good mood, after weeks of wine and song. I drift, I talk, I sing, and I know this, they will listen to you." He grinned his wolfish grin. "For flyers, that is quite unusual." Dorrel nodded. "Garth and I have talked to many of them. There's a lot of sympathy for you, particularly among the younger flyers. The older delegates, most of them, tend to side with Corm and tradition, but even they do not have their minds completely made up." Maris shook her head. "The older flyers outnumber the younger ones, Dor." Barian put a fatherly hand on her shoulder. "Then you will have to win them to your side also. After the things I've seen you do already, it should be easy enough." He smiled. The delegates had all filed inside, and now, from the door behind her, Maris heard the landsmen of Greater Amberley sound the ceremonial drumbeats that signalled the beginning of the council. "We must go," Maris said. Barian nodded. As a non-flyer, he was barred from the assembly. He squeezed her shoulder once for luck, then took his guitar and walked slowly down the steps. Maris, Col, and Dorrel hurried inside. The hall was an immense stone pit ringed by torches. In the centre of the sunken floor, a long table had been set up. The flyers sat around it in a semicircle, on rough stone seats that ascended tier after tier after tier, to the place where wall met ceiling. Jameis the senior, his thin face lined by age, sat in the centre of the long table. Though a landbound for several years now, his experience and character were still widely esteemed, and he had come by boat to preside. On either side of him sat the only two non-flyers admitted, the swarthy landsman of Greater Amberley and the portly ruler of Lesser. Corm had the fourth seat, at the right-hand end of the table. A fifth chair was empty on the left. Maris went to it, while Dorrel and Col climbed the stairs to their places. The drumbeat sounded again, a call for silence. Maris sat and looked around as the room began to quieten. Col had found a seat high up among the unwinged youths. Many of them had come by boat from nearby islands to see history be made, but like Col, they were expected to play no part in the decision. Now they ignored Col, as might be expected. Children eager for the sky could scarcely understand a boy who had willingly given up his wings. He looked dreadfully out of place and lonely, much as Maris felt. The drum stopped. Jameis the senior stood, and his deep voice rang over the hall.
"This is the first Flyers' Council in the memory of any here,"
he said. "Most of you already know the circumstances under which it has been called. My rules will be simple. Corm shall speak first, since he invoked this meeting. Then Maris, whom he accuses, shall have her chance to answer him. Then any flyer or former flyer here may have his or her say. I ask only that you speak loudly and name yourself before you talk. Many of us here are strangers to each other."
He sat down. And now Corm stood and spoke into the silence.
"I invoke this council by flyer's right," he said, his voice assured and resonant. "A crime has been committed, and its nature and implications are such that it must be answered by us all, by all flyers acting as one. Our decision shall determine our future, as have the decisions of councils past. Imagine what our world should be now, if our fathers and mothers before us had decided to bring warfare into the air. The kinship of all flyers would not be. We would be torn apart by petty regional rivalries instead of being properly airborne above the quarrels of the land." He went on, painting a picture of the desolation that could have followed had that long-ago council voted wrongly. He was a good speaker, Maris thought. He spoke like Barion sang. She shook herself out of the spell Corm was creating and wondered how she could possibly counter him. "The problem today is equally grave," Corm continued, "and your decision will not simply affect one person for whom you may feel sympathy, but rather all our children for generations to come. Mind you remember that as you listen to the arguments tonight."
He looked around, and although his burning eyes did not fall on her, Maris nevertheless felt intimidated.
"Maris of Lesser Amberley has stolen a pair of wings," he said. "The story, I think, is known to all of you."
But Corm told it nonetheless, from the facts of her birth to the scene on the beach.
"And a new bearer was found. But before Devon of Gavora, who is among us now, could arrive to claim his wings, Maris stole them and fled. But this is not the whole of it. Stealing is shameful, but even the theft of wings might not be grounds for a flyer's council. Maris knew she could not hope to keep the wings. She took them not to flee, but rather with the thought of revolting against our most vital traditions. She questions the very foundations of our society. She would open the ownership of the wings to dispute, threaten us with anarchy. Unless we make our disapproval plain, pass judgment on her in council that will go down in history, the facts could easily become distorted. Maris could be remembered as a brave rebel, and not the thief she is."
A twinge went through Maris at that word. Thief. Was that truly what she was?
"She has friends among the singers who would delight in mocking us," Corm was saying, "in singing songs in praise of her daring." And Maris heard in memory Barion's voice, "I'd rather make us all into heroes."
Her eyes sought out Col, and she saw that he was sitting straighter, with a slight smile on his lips. Singers did indeed have power, if they were good.
"So we must speak out plainly for all of history in denouncing what she has done," Corm said.
He faced Maris and looked down at her.
"Maris, I accuse you of the theft of wings, and I call upon the flyers of Windhaven, met in council, to name you outlaw, and pledge that none will land on any island you call home."
He sat. And in the awful silence that followed, Maris knew just how much she had offended him. She had never dreamed he would ask so much. Not content merely to take her wings, he would deny her life itself, force her into friendless exile on some distant empty rock.
"Maris," Jamis said gently. She had not risen. "It is your turn. Will you answer Corm?"
Slowly she got to her feet, wishing for the power of a singer, wishing that even once she could speak with the assurance Corm had in his voice.
"I cannot deny the theft," she said, looking up at the rows of blank faces, the sea of strangers.
Her voice was steadier than she had thought it would be.
I stole the wings out of desperation because they were my only chance. A boat would have been far too slow, and no one on Lesser Amberley was willing to help. I needed to reach a flyer who would call counsel for me. Once I did that, I surrendered my wings. I can prove this if... She looked over at Jameis. He nodded.
Dorrel picked up his cue. Halfway up in the tiered hall, he rose.
"Dorrel of Louse," he said loudly. "I vouch for Maris. As soon as she reached me, she gave her wings into my safe keeping and would not wear them again. I do not call this theft."
From around him, there was a chorus of approving murmurs. His family was known and esteemed, his word good. Maris had scored a point, and now she continued, feeling more confident with every word.
"I wanted a counsel for something I consider very important to us all, and to our future. But Corm beat me to it."
She grimaced slightly, unconsciously. And out in the audience she noticed a few smiles on the faces of flyers who were strangers to her. Skepticism? Contempt? Or support? Agreement? She had to will her hands to part and lie still by her sides. It would not do to be wringing her hands before them all.
"Corm says I'm fighting tradition," Maris continued, "and that's true. He has told you this is a terrible thing, but he hasn't said why. He hasn't explained why tradition needs to be defended against me. Just because something has always been done in one way doesn't mean that change is impossible or undesirable. Did people fly on the home worlds of the Star Sailors? If not, does that mean it was better not to fly? Well, after all, we aren't dauber birds, that if our beaks get pushed to the ground, we keep on walking that way until we fall over and die. We don't have to walk the same path every day. It wasn't bred into us."
She heard a laugh from her listeners and felt elated. She could paint pictures with words, even as Corm could. Those silly, waddling cave birds had gone from her mind to someone else's and drawn a laugh. She had mentioned breaking tradition, and still they listened. Inspired, she went on. "We are people, and if we have an instinct for anything, it is the instinct, the will, toward change. Things have always been changing, and if we're smart, we'll make the changes for ourselves and for the better before we're forced into them. The tradition of passing the wings on from parent to child has worked fairly well for a long time. Certainly it is better than anarchy, or the older tradition of trial by combat that sprang up in Easton during the days of sorrow. But it is not the only way, nor is it the perfect way."
"Enough talk," someone growled.
Maris looked around for the source and was startled to see Helmer rise from his seat in the second tier front. The flyer's face was bitter, and he stood with folded arms.
"Helmer," Jameis said firmly, "Maris has the floor." "I don't care," he said. "She attacks our ways, but she offers us nothing better, and for good reason. This way has worked for so many years because there is none better. It may be hard, yes. It's hard for you because you weren't born to a flyer. Sure it's hard, but have you another way?"
Helmer, she thought as he sat. Of course, his anger made sense. He was one whom this tradition would soon hurt, was hurting. Still young, he would be a landband in less than a year when his daughter came of age and took his wings. He had accepted the loss as inevitable, perhaps, as a rightful part of an honoured tradition. But now Maris attacked the tradition, the only thing that gave nobility to Helmer's sacrifice to come. If things remained unchanged, Maris wondered briefly, would Helmer in time hate his own daughter for her wings? And Russ, if he had not been injured, if Col had not been born?
"Yes," Maris said loudly, suddenly realizing that the room was silently awaiting her reply. "Yes, I do have a way. I would never have presumed to call a council if..." "You didn't," someone shouted, and others laughed.
Maris felt herself grow hot and hoped she was not blushing.
Jameis slapped the table hard. "Maris of Lesser Amberley is speaking," he said loudly. "The next one who interrupts her will be ejected."
Maris gave him a grateful smile.
"I propose a new way, a better way," she said.
I propose that the right to wear wings be earned. Not by birth or by age, but by the one measure that truly counts, by skill.
And as she spoke, the idea sprang suddenly into her head, more elaborate, more complex, more right than her vague concept of a free-for-all.
I propose a flying academy, open to all, to every child who dreams of wings. The standards would be very high, of course, and many would be sent away, but all would have the right to try. The son of a fisherman, the daughter of a singer, or a weaver, everyone could dream, hope. And for those who passed all the tests, there would be a final test. At our annual competition, they could challenge any flyer of their choice. And if they were good enough to outfly him or her, then they would win the wings. The best flyers would always keep the wings this way, and a defeated flyer, well, could wait for next year and try to win back the wings from the one who'd taken them. Or he or she could challenge someone else, some poorer flyer. No flyer could afford to be lazy. No one who did not love the sky would have to fly. And she looked at Helmer, whose face was unreadable. And more. Even the children of flyers would have to challenge to win the sky. They would claim their parents' wings only when they were ready, when they could actually fly better than their father or their mother. No flyer would become a landbound just because he'd married young and had a child come of age, while he should, by all that is just and right, still be in the sky. Only skill would be important, not birth, not age, the person, not tradition. She paused, on the verge of blurting out her own story of what it was like to be a fisherman's daughter and know the sky could never be hers, the pain, the longing. But why waste her breath? These were all born flyers, and she would not wring sympathy from them for the landbounds they held in contempt. No, it was important that the next woodwings born on Windhaven have a chance to fly, but it was no good as an argument. She had said enough. She had set it all before them, and the choice was theirs. She glanced briefly at Helmer, at the odd smile flickering over his face, and she knew with dead certainty that his vote was hers. She had just given him a chance to reclaim his life, without being cruel to his daughter. Satisfied, smiling, Maris sat. Jamis the senior looked over at Corm.
That sounds very nice, he said, smiling, in control.
Corm did not even bother to stand. At the sight of his calm, Maris felt all her painfully piled-up hope slip away.
A nice dream for a fisherman's daughter, and it's understandable.
Perhaps you don't understand about the wings, Maris. How do you expect families who have flown since forever, to put their wings up for grabs, to pass them on to strangers? Strangers who, without tradition or family pride, may not care for them properly, may not respect them. Do you truly think any of us would hand over our heritage to an impudent landbound, instead of our own children?
Maris's temper flared.
You expected me to give my wings to Coll, who could not fly as well as I.
They were never your wings, Corm said.
Her lips tightened. She said nothing.
If you thought they were, that was your folly, Corm said. Think. If wings are passed from person to person, like a cloak, if they are held for only a year or two, what sort of pride would their owners have in them? They would be borrowed, not owned. And everyone knows a flyer must own his wings, or he's not a flyer at all. Only a landbound would wish such a life on us.
Maris felt the sentiments of the audience shifting with each of Corm's words. He piled his arguments on top of each other so glibly that they all slipped away from her before she'd had a chance to get at them. She had to answer him. But how? How? The attachment of a flyer to his wings was nearly as strong as his attachment to his feet. She couldn't deny that. She couldn't fight it. She remembered her own anger when she felt Corm had not cared for her wings properly, and yet they were never hers at all, only her father's, her brother's.
"The wings are a trust," she blurted out. "Even now a flyer knows he must pass them on in time to his child."
"That is quite different," Corm said tolerantly. "Family is not the same as strangers. And a flyer's child
is not a land bound.
This is something too important to be silly about blood ties, Maris flashed at him, her voice rising. Listen to yourself, Corm. Listen to the snobbery that has been allowed to grow in you, in other flyers. Listen to your contempt for the land bound, as if they could help what they are with the laws of inheritance as they now stand. Her words were angry, and the audience grew perceptibly more hostile. She would lose it all if she championed the land bound against the flyers, she suddenly realized. Maris willed herself to be calm. We do have pride in our wings, she said, consciously returning to her strongest arguments. And that pride, if it is strong enough, should make sure we keep them. Good flyers will keep the sky. If challenged, they will not be defeated easily. If defeated, they will come back. And they will have the satisfaction of knowing that the flyer who takes their wings is good, of knowing that their replacement will bring honour to the wings and use them well, regardless of parentage. The wings are meant to be, Corm began, but Maris would not let him finish. The wings are not meant to be lost in the sea, she said. And clumsy flyers, flyers who have taken no care to be really good because they've never had to, these are the flyers who have lost wings for us all. Some hardly deserved the name of flyer. And what of the children who are really too young for the sky, though they may be of age technically? They panic, fly foolishly, and die, taking their wings with them. She glanced quickly at Col. Or how about the ones who are not meant to fly at all? Being born of a flyer doesn't mean you'll have the skill. My own Col, whom I love as a brother and a son, he was never meant to be a flyer. The wings were his, yet I couldn't give them to him. Didn't want to give them to him. Oh, even if he had wanted them, I wouldn't have wanted to give them up. Your system won't change that, someone shouted. Maris shook her head. No, it wouldn't. I still wouldn't be happy about losing my wings, but if I were bested, well, I could stay on at the academy, train, wait for next year and try to get them back. Oh, nothing is going to be perfect, don't you see, because there aren't enough wings, and that's going to get worse, not better. But we must try to stop it. Stop all the wings that are lost each year. Stop sending out unqualified flyers. Stop losing so many. There will still be accidents, we'll still have dangers, but we won't lose wings and flyers because of poor judgment and fear and lack of skill. Exhausted, Maris ran out of words. But her speech had stirred the audience, moved it back toward her. A dozen hands were up. Jameis pointed, and a solidly built Shotaner rose from the mass.
Dirk of Big Shotan, he said in a low voice. And then he repeated it again when the flyers in the back shouted, Louder! Louder!
His speech was awkward and self-conscious.
I just wanted to say I've been sitting here and listening. I've been, I never expected all this just to vote on an outlawing.
He shook his head, clearly having difficulty getting the words out.
Oh, be damned, he said finally. Maris is right. I'm half ashamed to say it, but I shouldn't be. It's the truth. I don't want my son to have my wings. I'm afraid to. He's a good boy, mind you, and I love him. But he has attacks now and again, you know, the shaking sickness. He can't fly like that. He shouldn't fly. But he's grown up thinking of nothing else, and next year when he's 13, he'll expect my wings, and with things like they are, I'll have to give them to him, and he'll fly off and die. And then I won't have my son, and I won't have my wings, and I might as well die too. No.
He sat down. A dark red colour, and out of breath. Several people shouted support. Maris, heartened, looked over at Corm, and saw that his smile was flickering. Suddenly he had doubts. A familiar friend rose then, and smiled at her from above.
I'm Garth of Skulney, he said. I'm with Maris too.
Another speaker backed her, then another, and Maris smiled. Dorrel had scattered friends all over the audience, and now they were trying to stampede the assembly her way, and it seemed to be working, for in between the endorsements from flyers she had known for years, total strangers stood to voice their support. Had they won, then? Corm clearly looked worried.
You recognize what is wrong with our way, but I think your academy is not the answer.
The words jolted Maris out of her complacent optimism. The speaker was a tall blonde woman, a leading flyer from the outer islands.
There is a reason for our tradition, and we should not weaken it, or our children may go back to the idiocy of trial by combat. What we must do is teach our children better. You must teach them to have more pride, and we must build the needed skills in them from the time they are very small. This is as my mother taught me, and I am teaching my son. Perhaps a test of some sort is necessary. Your idea of a challenge is good.
Her mouth twisted wryly.
I admit I do not look forward to the day which comes too quickly, when I must give up my wings to Vard. Both of us will be too young, I think, when that day comes. That he should have to compete with me to prove himself as good, no, a better flyer than I am. Yes, that is an excellent idea.
Other flyers in the hall were nodding in agreement. Yes, yes, of course. Why hadn't they seen what a good idea some sort of testing would be? Everyone knew that the coming of age was rather arbitrary, but some were still children when they took on wings, others full adults. Yes, let the youngsters prove themselves as flyers first. The tide swept the assembly.
But this academy, the speaker said gently, that is not necessary. We birth enough new flyers among ourselves. I know your background, and I can understand your feelings, but I cannot share them. It would not be wise.
She sat down, and Maris felt her heart sink with her. That had done it, she thought. Now they will vote for a test, but the sky will still be closed to those born of the wrong parents. The flyers would reject the most important part. So close, she'd almost done it. But not close enough. A gaunt man in silk and silver stood.
"Aris, flyer and prince of Artelia," he said, his eyes ice blue beneath his silver crown. "I vote with my sister from the outer islands. My children are of royal blood, born and bred to wings. It would be a joke to force them to fly in races with commoners. But a test to see when they are worthy... Now, that is an idea worthy of a flyer."
He was followed by a dark woman, all in leather.
"Zevakul of Dith in southern archipelago," she began. "Each year I fly messages from my landsman, but I also serve the sky god, like all of the upper castes. The concept of passing wings to a lower one, a soil child, possibly an unbeliever, no."
Other echoes came and rolled across the hall.
"Joy of Stormhammer the Outermost, I say yes, make us fly to earn our wings, but only against the children of flyers."
"Thomas of Little Shotan, children of the land-born could never learn to love the sky as we do. It would be a waste of time and money to build this academy Maris speaks of, but I'm for a test."
"Crane of Poet, and I'm with these people. Why should we have to compete with the children of fisher people? They don't let us compete for their boats, do they?"
The hall rocked with laughter, and the older flyer grinned.
"Yes, a joke, a good one. Well, brothers, we would be a joke. This academy would be a joke if it let in riff-raff of any birth at all. Wings belong to flyers, and over the years it has remained that way because it is the way it is. The other people are content, and very few of them really want to fly. For most, it's only a passing whim, or too frightening to think about. Why should we encourage idle dreams? They are not flyers, were never meant to be. And they can lead worthwhile lives in some other..."
Maris listened in disbelief and rising anger, infuriated by the smug self-righteousness of his tone. And then she saw with horror that other flyers, including some of the younger ones, were bobbing their heads complacently in time with his words. Yes, they were better because they were born of flyers. Yes, they were superior and did not wish to mix. Yes, yes. Suddenly it did not matter that in times past she had felt much the same way about the landbound. Suddenly all she could think of was her father, her blood father, the dead fisherman she scarcely remembered. Memories she had thought gone came back. sensory impressions chiefly. Stiff clothes that reeked of salt and fish, warm hands, rough but gentle, that smoothed her hair and wiped tears off her cheeks after her mother had scolded her. And stories he had told in his low voice, tales of things he had seen that day in his little skiff, what the birds had looked like racing away from a sudden storm, how the moonfish leapt toward the night sky, how the wind felt and the waves sounded against the boat. Her father had been an observant man, and a brave one, daring the ocean every day in his frail boat, and Maris knew in her hot rage that he was the inferior of no one here, of no one on Windhaven. "You snobs!" she said sharply, not caring any more whether it would help or hurt the vote. "All of you, thinking how superior you are, just because you were born of a flyer and inherited wings through no goodness of your own. You think you inherited your parents' skill? Well, how about the other half of your heritage? Or were all of you born of flyer marriages?" She jabbed an accusing finger at a familiar face on the third tier. "You, Sar, you were nodding just then. Your father was a flyer, yes, but your mother was a trader and born of fisherfolk. Do you look down on them? What if your mother confessed that her husband was not your real father? What if she told you that you could blame your birth on a trader she met in the East? What then? Would you feel obliged to give up your wings and seek some other life?" Moon-faced Sar only gaped at her. Never a quick man, he couldn't understand why she'd singled him out. Maris withdrew her finger and launched her anger against them all. "My true father was a fisherman, a fine, brave, honest man who never wore wings and never wanted them. But if he had been chosen to be a flyer, he would have been the best of all. Songs would be sung of him, celebrating him. If we inherit our talent from our parents, look at me. My mother can spin and gather oysters. I cannot. My father could not fly. I can. And some of you know how good I am, better than some who were born to it." She turned and glanced down the length of the table. "Better than you, Corm," she said in a voice that carried all through the great hall. "Or have you forgotten?" Corm glared up at her, his face flushed with anger, a thick vein bulging in his neck. He said nothing. Maris turned back to the hall. Her voice softened, and she looked out on them with full solicitude. "Are you afraid?" she asked them. "Have you hung on to your wings only on the strength of a pretense? Are you afraid that all the grubby little fisher children will come and snatch them away from you, prove themselves better flyers than you, and make you all look fools?" Then all her words were gone, and her anger. And Maris sat back in her chair, and silence hung heavy in the great stone hall. Finally, a hand went up, and then another. But Jameis only stared blankly ahead, his face thoughtful. No one moved until at last he stirred himself, as if from sleep, and gestured at someone in the crowd. High up against the wall, an old man with one dead arm stood alone in the flickering yellow torchlight. The assembly turned to watch him. "Russ of Lesser Amberley," he began. His tone was gentle. "My friends, Maris is right. We have been fools, and none of us has been so big a fool as I. Not long ago I stood on a beach and said I had no daughter. Tonight I wish I could have back those words. I wish I still had the right to call Maris my daughter. She has made me very proud, but she isn't mine. No, as she said, she was born of a fisherman. A better man than I. All I did was love her for a bit and teach her how to fly. It didn't take much teaching, you know. She was always so eager, my little woodwings. There was nothing could stop her, nothing, not even me, when like a fool I tried to, after Call was born. Maris is the finest flyer on Amberley, and my blood has nothing to do with it. Only her desire matters, only her dream. And if you, my flyer brothers, if you have such disdain for the children of the land-bound, then it is a shaming thing for you to fear them. Have you so little faith in your own children?
Are you so certain that they could not keep their wings against a fisher child's hungry challenge?
Rath shook his head.
I don't know. I'm an old man, and things have been confused lately. But I know this much. If I still had use of my arm, no one would take my wings from me, not even if his father was a nighthawk. And no one will ever take Maris's wings until she's ready to set them down. No, if you truly teach your children to fly well, they will keep the sky. If you have the pride you boast of, you'll live up to it and prove it by letting the wings be worn only by those who have earned them, only by those who have proven themselves in the air.
Russ sat down again, and the darkness at the top of the hall swallowed him up. Combe began to say something, but Jamis the senior silenced him.
"We've had enough from you," he said.
Combe blinked in surprise.
"I think I will say something," Jamis said, "and then we will vote. Russ has spoken wisdom for all of us, but one thought I must add. Are we not each of us descended from the Star Sailors? All of Windhaven is family, really. And there is none among us who cannot find a flyer in his or her family tree if we go back far enough. Think of that, my friends. And remember that while your eldest child may wear your wings and fly, his younger brother and sisters and all their children for generations after will be landbound. Should we really deny them the wind forever, simply because their ancestors were second-born instead of first?
Jamis smiled.
Perhaps I should add that I was my mother's second son. My elder brother died in a storm 6 months before he was to take his wings. A small thing, that, don't you think?
He looked around at the two landsmen who flanked him, who had sat silently through all the proceedings, quieted by Flyer's Law. He whispered first to one, then to the other, and nodded.
We find that Corm's proposal to name Maris of Lesser Amberley an outlaw is out of order, Jamis said. We will now vote on Maris's proposal to establish a Flyer's Academy open to all. I vote in favour.
After that, there was no more doubt.
Afterward, Maris felt slightly in shock, giddy with victory, yet somehow not able to believe that it was really over, that she did not have to fight any more. The air outside the hall was clean and wet, the wind blowing steadily from the east. She stood on the steps and savoured it, while friends and strangers crowded about her wanting to talk. Doral kept his arm around her, and did not ask questions nor express amazement. He was restful to lean against. What now, she wondered. Home again? Where was Cole? Perhaps he'd gone to fetch Barion and bring the boat. The crowd around her parted. Russ stood there, Jamis at his side. Her stepfather was holding a pair of wings.
Maris, he said.
Father? Her voice was trembling.
This is how it should have been all along, he said, smiling at her. I would be proud if you would let me call you daughter again. After all that I've done, I would be even prouder if you would wear my wings. You've won them, Jamis said. The old rules don't apply, and you're certainly qualified. Until we get the academy going, there's no one to wear them except you and Devon, and you took better care of these than Devon ever did of his.
Her hands went out to take the wings from Russ. They were hers again. She was smiling, no longer tired, buoyed by the weight of them in her hands, the familiarity of them. "Oh, Father!" she said. And then, weeping, she and Russ embraced each other. When the tears were gone, they all went to the Flyer's Cliff, quite a crowd of them. "Let's fly to the Eyrie," she said to Doral. Then there was Garth, just beyond. She had not noticed him in the crowd before. "Garth, you come too. We'll have a party."
"Yes!" Doral said. "But is the Eyrie the place for it?"
Maris flushed. "Oh, of course not." She glanced around at the crowd. "No, we'll go back to our house on Lesser and everyone can come. Us and Father and the landsman and Jameis and Barion will sing for us, if we can find him. And then she saw Col running towards her, his face alight. Maris! Maris! He ran to her and hugged her enthusiastically, then broke away, grinning. Where did you go to? Off with Barry and I had to. I'm making a song. Just got the start of it now, but it will be good. I can feel it. It really will be. It's about you.
Me?
He was obviously proud of himself. Yes, you'll be famous. Everyone will sing it and everyone will know about you.
They already do, Doral said. Believe me.
Oh, but I mean forever. For as long as this song is sung, they'll know about you. The girl who wanted wings so much, she changed the world.
And perhaps it was true, Maris thought later, as she strapped on her wings and rose into the wind with Doral and Garth by her side. But to have changed the world didn't seem half so important nor half so real as the wind in her hair, the familiar pull of muscles as she rose, riding the beloved currents she had thought might be lost to her forever. She had her wings again. She had the sky. She was whole now, and she was happy.